If you've just tuned in, you're listening to the Science News Radio Network special presentation, Promise of Tomorrow, with Colonel Mason. Those of you listening on radio can also hear us commercial-free online anytime, webcast, at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Well, as you know, from time to time, we do our press coverage of the Metricon conference. It's sponsored by Lockheed Martin and an Encore Electric delivery. And this year is going to be the 32nd year the Metricon has been held, and you won't want to miss this conference. The 50th anniversary of the moon landing and surprise keynote speakers and all sorts of different things. You can find out more about the Metricon conference at our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz. And right now, we're pretty excited because we have one of the speakers with us today. His name is Eduardo Voss. And he is director of product for QRA Corporation, and he's going to be speaking at the conference about requirements for validation design verification and how artificial intelligence can enable safe autonomous systems. And that's something we're everybody is keenly excited about. So welcome to the program, Dr. Voss.
Thank you so much, Colonel Mason, and hello to everyone.
Yes, now, you're director of product for QRA Corporation. You're speaking right now from your home in Halifax, Nova Scotia, and that's where QRA is located, I understand. Is that right?
That is correct, yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about what QRA does?
Sure. So QRA is a technology company. We build software that focuses on verification and validation of complex systems. And we focus on solving problems people have on the earlier stages of development. So from the beginning when they start to elicit requirements and write down requirements all the way to the system designs, that's our domain, that's the area where we work. And, you know, we're a group now growing over the last 6 or 7 years of scientists and mathematicians and computer scientists and physicists, which is the background of some of us, some of the first people, and the goal really is to create tools for the industrial engineer on the ground that really just needs tools to solve problems, and you know, we find that this is a crucial time to be creating these tools, and I think we'll be speaking more on the details of the technology and on the details of the overall space where we're heading.
Are you at liberty to tell us some of the clients that are using your tools currently?
Sure, yeah. So we have, I can tell you a few of them. We have some in aerospace, such as Lockheed Martin Aeronautics, actually in Fort Worth, Texas. And we also have some groups from Honeywell Aerospace. And some other ones in aerospace, like I'm not at the liberty to speak of yet. We have some in the semiconductor industry, some of the larger ones. We have a few in automotive as well. We have some in the energy field, like Shell and Eni. And now we're also starting to gain traction in the medical device domain as well. So some of the larger medical device manufacturers are starting to use our tools, and that's it. You know, we cover fairly broadly the domain of safety critical cyber physical systems.
Wow, that's quite a list of people that you're doing business with, and I see you say that 80% of the errors in the systems are introduced in the early stages of development, from requirements authoring to systems design. And I wonder if you could maybe drill down on that a little bit for us. What are some of these errors in the systems that you've run into and that you're in the process of solving?
Right. So we find that, and quite a few studies have come to these results, around 80 and a bit more of overall defects in systems are due to the requirements and design stage of the development. So they're introduced at the requirements or design stage, and they're often found later. So these are errors that range from just ambiguous terminology. It's misinterpreted at some point down the development life cycle, and some engineer will make a decision, this is how it should be, based on the information he got, but it was not complete information, and that was actually, the end result was not what they wanted. So some of these errors are not catastrophic errors, they're just errors that end up delaying time to market of products, or increasing costs tremendously for the company, the overall project costs. Other errors are also introduced at that stage, and it could be, say, wrong units. You know, there's some classic examples where the wrong units were used on a space system that was sent. It was a Mars orbiter, and it had units. A set of the units were in imperial, and some other set of the units were in metric, and some conversion error happened along the way, and the orbiter went off course and it crashed. So that was in that case, no lives were lost, but it was a tremendously expensive error. And then other type of errors are ones where the designs themselves that ultimately are the implementation, where it was a landing gear design that was going into an aircraft. This is not from any company that I've mentioned right now, but an analysis was done using our tools on this fairly complex logic control system for the landing gear, and it was found that the landing gear would go into a fault state with no exception handling for that. That means it would lock in that state permanently. The consequence of that is now you had an aircraft in the air that when a certain perfect storm of conditions was met, the landing gear control system would lock, and then it would never deploy. And so that means it could not land safely after that. It essentially would have to crash land in some location. And this was intended actually for a commercial aircraft. So that was that. The consequences of that could have been, catastrophic in all senses. So those are the type of problems that we aim to address, and that we have been addressing, is finding those really early stage ambiguity errors in the textual requirements, all the way down to are those highly complex control systems for the most modern aircraft in the world right now. Are those really meeting the requirements, or are there any scenarios where they may fail? And you know, we need to find those issues before the machines are deployed and people are on them.
Oh, yeah, and of course, fresh in everybody's mind right at the moment is the problems that Boeing has been having with their transport airplane. What is it, the 737 B or something like that?
That's correct.
Yeah, and what's the story there? Do you have some insights for us?
Yeah, well, a little bit. You know, we know a few people at Boeing, and I think they're working really hard. You know, it's one of these situations where, as far as we understand, it was just a scenario that was not considered fully, where it was, you know, some things may have been missed in the design, but there are a couple sensors that assess what the angle of inclination of the aircraft is, and basically there was a flaw in one of these sensors, and it was measuring the value was wrong, so it kept telling the aircraft that it was going at a higher angle than it was actually going, so it kept pushing down to try to meet the correct angle, but that actually on the physical system, that meant just pushing the aircraft down toward the ground, and that's what created the problem. And, I mean, it was a catastrophic accident, and you know, as far as we understand, it's being addressed quite intensely, but we don't really have much insight right now. Their focus is addressing that rather than talking to anyone about it.
Well, as JQ Public goes, you know, we consumers, we would like to have these flaws found in the laboratory before they're found in actual practice, and that's quite a concern to us, especially with all this talk about now transport trucks being autonomous, and we already have autonomous tractors, you know, in the fields, in the farm for the farmers, but autonomous cars and those sorts of things. We would really not like to have the problems be found in practical use, but be found beforehand. And you're going to be able to provide that?
That's our goal. That's what we're doing now. We're working on those tools. We are providing those tools now, and those tools are evolving to meet the increasing level of complexity of these machines. So what you have is that there, you know, at every stage in the history of industrial innovation, there have been challenges. So, you know, way back in the late 1700s, early 1800s, we had, you know, mechanization, water power, and steam power, and there were issues with that, and they were eventually addressed, and then it became mature technology. Then we went on to mass production, assembly lines, electricity, and that kind of thing. Obviously, huge issues with that, you know, DC versus AC power, that kind of stuff took a long time to resolve because they were highly complex to that age. And then, you know, in the late 1900s, early 2000s, now we have gone into computer and automation. And that obviously, you know, has had huge repercussions. But at all these stages, I suppose, the one key is that there were still the final decision as to what to do was a human making that decision. So we're in a bit of a new stage here, in all senses, with these cyber-physical autonomous systems. Because now we are really letting, we're kind of delegating the decision making to what a physical system is going to do. To now, it's a software algorithm, and it's okay if this is just your fridge. And I think this is kind of what you were alluding to. But when it's an autonomous vehicle and you're driving beside a semi truck that's autonomous down the highway at 100 and some clicks per hour, then, you know, you want to have some assurance that that truck is not going to just swerve your way.
Yeah.
And the key here is, or part of the issue here, is that these systems have gone from being relatively closed systems to what we call open systems. And in open systems, that means that there's some of the inputs and interactions and systems that are neighboring you that you are controlling that you actually don't have control of and you are not aware of. So this interconnectedness, this kind of net of things that really we're evolving towards, it's what's increasing that level of complexity at an exponential rate. Because now that autonomous vehicle on the road is not just understanding how that closed system of the autonomous vehicle itself works, but is trying to predict the entire environment, including all the other vehicles that are perhaps autonomous, maybe not, but also just environmental conditions such as rain or hail or snow or a pothole or anything like that to humans or other animals just roaming around the street. So it becomes this open system nature that we're heading into, tied in with the fact that we are now making these systems be the decisions being made by a computer, is what increases the uncertainty and the complexity. And this is why we need now this new generation of testing and analysis and diagnostics and verification tools, using similar type of technologies, using very smart technology, you know, what some people are calling AI, this artificial intelligence, is really the type of technology we're now implementing into the verification tools. And that makes sense to us that, you know, if we're going to be using AI in the autonomous vehicle, we should also be using some level of AI along with the human domain expert to verify that that vehicle is going to do what it has to do.
Well, yeah. And, of course, this brings up so many questions and fears. Being open systems, the hacking of some terrorist who decides they want to take over a fleet of trucks and run them into pedestrians at some market someplace, and all sorts of different scenarios have to be guarded against. It could be pretty catastrophic. So you guys really got your work cut out for you in how you're going to do these things. Not only that, but if we're talking about machine learning and you've got a bad machine teaching another machine, it'll just pick up the bad habits that machine has. How are you going to confront all these things?
So that's a great point, Colonel Mason. And I think what has driven the company is that we understand, actually, with a background in physics, which is what a few of the early people in the company have, including myself, we understood that the human brain works differently than a regular kind of sequential deterministic computer, which is the computers that we use nowadays, and these are the computers that are going to be dealing with this autonomous system. So The key then is that we automate what we can automate, or we automate, let me put it in a different way, we automate what we should automate, and then some key validation stages are still done by a domain expert, by a human domain expert. So our goal at QRA is not to remove the human from the loop, it's in fact to optimize the role of the human in the loop such that the human is not being exhausted by doing the menial tasks or finding that every unit in the set of 5,000 requirements is in metric. We can find that. We have technology to do that. He can then he or she can then come and review those results to validate that was done properly. So one of the issues that we have been told by a lot of the engineers in these safety critical companies are the errors sometimes happen for relatively mundane reasons. It's not so much that it was so complex that the engineer missed it. It's sometimes that there was exhaustion playing a role. There was, you have a limited amount of time and a limited amount of resources, and there was an exhaustion of those. And sometimes if you have the same engineer looking at the same system for too long, there's an exhaustion where the engineer may just miss some things because they're so close to the trees, they don't see the forest, right? Mm-hmm. So trying to reduce that pressure on the engineer to have to see it all from the very complex to the very simplistic, reducing that load on the engineer is key. So we still need that human brain to be part of the loop at the key moments where the validation that the results of the analysis is done, but the processes before and after can be aided with this artificial intelligence. So the key is definitely not to just use artificial intelligence because of that same reason. We then need another system to validate that system, and it's just you'll never have assurance. So having those redundant processes and having the separation of roles between the engineer and the machine is key.
So the current plan is not to just turn the world over to machines, but to have a little oversight from the brains that put these machines together. What is it, finally, let's cut right to it. What is the main takeaway that you want your audience to, when they get through hearing what you have to say, what is the point you really want to drive home and have them remember?
Great question. The main point is their expertise has to be optimized to the key moments of decision making as they're verifying that the systems do what they should do. And the key message is that there are tools out there that harness these new emerging technology that can help them do their job as well as possible and just improve the confidence on the systems that they build so that they know throughout the entire process there's no question that they got all the bases covered, because it was them and the machine together doing that analysis on the systems of tomorrow. So that is a takeaway, that we can harness a lot of these technologies we're building in our actual jobs as we build them to make better and safer machines.
Well, okay, Eduardo, that's great. I want you to, if you would, put your thinking cap on here a little bit and your optical vision and look down the road 5 years or 10 years or so, or even longer if you feel so inclined, and give us a look into the future. What's coming?
Okay, well, that's I think what's coming is you know, there's going to be some especially over the next, I would say, 5 to 10 years, we're going to have, it's going to be a steep learning curve. So we are going to see, whether we like it or not, more of these systems out on the roads, in the skies, in the seas, in our homes. And we will find as we go, it's kind of through, if you want, a bit of an agile process, we will find a lot of the things that we missed in development, we will find through operations. So we'll find the systems will have some errors, we'll make some mistakes, and you know, and those are many of the things that we're going to see on the news. But they're also going to bring capabilities that we had never thought of before. So they will allow us to not put humans now in dire situations unless it's absolutely necessary, because these machines will be able to now go and do explorations through areas, or in mining situations, or underwater situations, or any of these where has been a safety critical, mission critical type of scenario, where now we can remove the human, and the human can be in a safer location as the machines are doing the dangerous work. So we will be reaching a point where we will be able to be validating the information coming in from these machines from a safe location. And, you know, in terms of autonomy and more civil autonomy, the autonomous vehicles area, for example, I think what we're going to see is, apart from those edge cases where there'll be accidents, what we'll find is overall the roads in the long term will become safer. Likely what you're going to have is a reduction on the number of vehicles out there and optimization of the way vehicles are used. I think we'll eventually think about mobility and transportation in a very different way. Right now, you know, we own a couple of vehicles in my family, and most people probably listening to this will own a vehicle, and it's a normal concept right now that you own the vehicle. I think that will change. I think at some point it's not going to be so much the tool but the action that you want. You want to get from point A to point B, and some vehicle, you're going to probably bring out your phone, just say that's what I want to do, and some vehicle will appear, will drive up to where you are, pick you up and take you there, and you're going to probably not even look outside much. You're going to just continue to have a conversation on the phone with a friend or be on your computer or something like that. So I think a lot of the way we assume the world is right now is going to change, and I would say in some ways for the better. I think we will optimize energy systems, I think we'll optimize transportation systems, and it will be really interesting to see how we optimize, you know, space exploration and the transfer of knowledge throughout the world.
Well, Eduardo, you've been a fascinating guest, and before we get out of here, I have to ask you, I know that during your studies and things in your career, you've been mentored by people that you've truly admired, and they've given you tips on how to get along in life, and you're probably right now at the process of mentoring others, younger people that are looking to you for advice and that sort of thing. Do you have a creed for living or a sort of words to live by that you can pass on to us?
Thank you. That's a very nice thing to ask. Sure, I would say one of the things my father actually told me is everything's a choice. And at first, when I was a kid, and he told me that, I didn't probably grasp everything he meant by that. But he meant that in many different ways. And some people have said, well, no. Some things are not a choice. You know, sometimes war is not a choice. And I agree with that. I think what he meant with everything is a choice is the way you react to situations, the way you accept new challenges is really up to you. The challenges will show up. They'll be in front of you. But the way you decide to take those is up to you. And what I've learned is that it's always good to keep an open mind and be in awe of what humans can do, and we're doing amazing things with that. So being creative, being willing to get out of the box and fail is fine as long as you know how to take that learn from that and make better decisions after that. So everything is a choice. It's a very positive motto I live.
Thank you, Dr. Eduardo Vallas, Director of Product for QRA Corporation. His talk is going to be from requirements validation to design verification and how artificial intelligence can enable safe autonomous systems. You've been a fascinating guest. I've hit you with some hard questions, and you've had some great answers. And so we're going to look forward to seeing you at the Metricon Conference. This is going to be the 32nd annual conference going on in Hearst, Texas. It's right between Dallas and Fort Worth. Very convenient. And it's going to be the November 6th, as a matter of fact. You can find out more information on that at our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz. On the right-hand side of your screen, you'll see a link. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Voss.
Thank you so much, Colonel Mason, and I look forward to meeting you at Metricon and meeting all your guests.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to the Science News Radio Network special presentation, Promise of Tomorrow, with Colonel Mason. Those of you listening on radio can also hear us commercial-free online anytime, webcast, at promiseoftomorrow.biz.